The Hello Careers podcast explores a system developed to align business needs with education and training. It's proven to be invaluable for dozens of businesses and people looking to create a new life for themselves. We are firm believers that you must screen for attitude and train for aptitude. We're unpacking our insight to help you build partnerships and earn public support for an age-old way of learning a skill, apprenticeship. We'll address issues such as, where there's a skills gap, is there an education and training gap? How do you respond to a tight labor market? What happens when the major employer pulls out of your community? If you're looking to create an apprenticeship program or curious about what to do next, this show could be just the thing you've been looking for. I'm your host, Mark Sylvester. Now, let's get started and talk with the team. Well, welcome back to the show. Michael and Dan, the past seven conversations, we've done the deep dive into the program and understood Hello Careers and understand what you've done, and we've taken this nice snapshot now at the end of 3 years of work. So I want to spend our last episode here talking about the future, but I want to start with a question that I might have asked, should have asked at the beginning, which is, what are you building?
Really, we're building a system that a favorite saying that I have from a colleague over in Tulare and Kings County is, act like a program, think like a system. Everyone can understand what a program does and who a program is. Nobody wants to hear about a system, but you have to have a system in place so it's sustainable, because you don't want something that's personality driven and will disappear once that personality goes away. So we've been consciously trying to develop that system in partnership with all these different entities so that it is sustainable and is responsive to this rapidly changing economy that we live in.
Dan, where are you?
I agree with Michael. I think it can't be tied to apprenticeship only scales if there is an entrepreneur residence and a 20-year teacher who's an administrator now pulling it off. We have to think of it, it's an ecosystem. It's a franchisable ecosystem, and that's really what we're trying to create.
When we look back at, let's just look at this last year, the things that you've done, what are the immediate things we've got to do better, let's say in the next year?
I think the first one is being able to handle such a large number of people applying. What happened last time is we had so many people apply that we couldn't give the last applicants the same amount of attention as the first ones. So now we're using a new software technology that lets us give the last applicant a second before the deadline the same amount of exposure as the first. And that software system enables us to figure out, based on how much time we have available, in priority order, who should we phone screen? Which was big, but it was because we knew as we scale, we can't require manual processes that can't handle. We had 100 applicants yesterday. Because what happens when you go viral, that can happen.
Yeah.
But we don't want to say the late applicants we can't consider because we're still busy with the early applicants.
We haven't figured out how to grow this.
That was a big shift for us, is just to invest in the technology.
And the reason I ask that is that the person who's listening to this, we want to learn from, it all sounds great. As I said earlier, where's the dragon in this story? Like, where are the things, that immediate things that we've got to start paying attention to?
Well, we talked about another one is Michael's big from his education background of this hybrid approach to education and not classroom. What we did the first time was too much classroom, and it wasn't adaptive as much as we would like for the overachievers to move twice as fast, but still be inclusive to the people. This is really new and are on a steep learning curve.
How does that square with the requirements that you mentioned, that there were a certain number of classroom hours that
that you had to apply for? So if you're doing a hybrid model,
it can be online. It can be in a variety of different ways. It's actually called related and supplemental instruction, RSI.
Great term that I had to learn this year as well,
RSI. And they're very open to how do you deliver the information and content that's necessary.
Because I know you guys are pushing the envelope in a lot of different areas, and so that was one I was thinking you might.
I think Michael and I both know online by itself, especially for tech-related things, can be very lonely. Because, you know, the idea, like in computer science, of pair programming is so much better to learn by yourself.
Yep.
But we're going to be pushing the envelope in the second cohort of how we actually do the instruction. We're going to be going into three new areas we weren't in last year. But it's constantly learning, you know, with that launch and learn, there's best practices. But everything's new every day. It's like, well, this is different than last year. So something that might have worked last year doesn't, but that's the fun.
The classroom cohort model was really good in building camaraderie between the apprentices. They created their own Discord group and were helping each other. And there's still a lot of camaraderie and support amongst them in the first cohort. So we want to have enough of that. Can we replicate that through meetups and other types of networking type events with businesses? But then there's a lot of online content there that we don't need to be doing that in the classroom, that you should be able to do that on your own time or, you know, pick up that content. But then how do you apply it?
What are the we know what we don't know and then we don't know what we don't know that. So what are the things that you know that are coming up that are going to cause some friction for the program that you're thinking about now? I won't say they keep you up at night, but they're, because I'm thinking these are going to come along line for the person who's listening. So what are the ones you know you've got to deal with here in the next year and a half?
Making sure that your work processes stay current with what the business demands are. So it's that constant responsiveness to the changes in a rapidly changing industry.
And I think at the same time, don't give too much autonomy for the business to stray from the intent of what the position can be. Because businesses can propose changes to their work processes. So we have, at a high level, the default work process for a software tester, for example. And then the individual employers can say, I'm going to change this, this hours is different. So we have to make sure that, yeah, we'll do customization, but it still needs to be true to what a software tester who might end up with another company a year later has as their training.
A certified software tester,
yes,
right?
At a state level.
Right. So you want to make sure they're getting all of that.
Right. So it's that balance. You want to be flexible, but not too flexible, which means you really have to understand, oh, I know why you're changing that. But I think you still need to have at least 20 hours in this other area.
Are there potential friction points coming up on the public sector side?
Maintaining partnerships takes time, effort, and as I said before, expect conflict. You know, there may be different missions, different goals, different visions from different partners. You've got to be respectful of each partner's willingness to enter into the partnership or exit from the partnership if it's not the right fit for them.
Have you had, so again, let's to give someone a practical example, have you had a conflict like that you resolved, and how did you resolve it?
So on certain programs, Cuesta College, it wasn't a match, it wasn't a good fit, that their computer science program is a really successful transfer rate to Cal Poly. And so their instructor is just fine with their curriculum. And, you know, that's a good curriculum with good outcomes that are happening. But then we're working in the building and construction trades right now. We have a faculty member there that's really interested in working with us and wants to help work together on that building and construction apprenticeship program so that they can build their own program. So it has to be the right fit for those faculty champions and things like that. I think you have to be respectful of those teachers who are already experts in their field and have their own training programs, that they be given that autonomy and that freedom of, do they want to participate or not? Is this the right fit for them or not?
I'd say the number one source of challenges in us partnering with community colleges is we're about velocity on an asynchronous schedule. So we're about boot camp format, not
right.
Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, there's an hour class. And if we provide a career path on a quarterly basis, it could be dynamic of how many people we have this time versus that time, which is very different from a master schedule at a college that says, no, we're on a semester system and our classes are like this and none of our rooms are available for 7 weeks in a row, 8 to 5. You know, that was some of our challenges, is just boot camps maximize learning per calendar day, not per quarter or per semester or per AS degree. So I think that's a fundamental challenge that's addressable, but it's just, it's a different paradigm.
Personalized learning is something that you can see on the internet. Everyone is trying to figure out what that can look
right,
like.
Right,
and
right.
It's going to be very disruptive to traditional institutional programs where there's a class schedule and there is a curriculum and there is a sequence of events that happen. This idea of personalized learning is going to be disruptive. And so it will polarize existing, you know, existing parties who are doing these types of things.
Isn't that going to massively disrupt education, though, in general?
Yes. I mean, that's right. That's the elephant in the room.
But I think that's what we're on the forefront of doing, is this is education done as a ed tech startup. But I think this type of mentality of the pop-up university tied to employer demand, that's very disruptive.
And there's a certain question of generalized education has definitely its place, but then there's these specific specialized training.
Right.
And, you know, I think they both need, there's a place for both of them. Right now, what we're intensively exploring is what does the specialized training look like based upon what are some specific needs that are needed in the economy and the local labor market.
And because you, at the very beginning, I love what you said, act like a program, think like a system. You've engineered a system that's very agile, right? That's very flexible. So that, Dan, if you go in and have a conversation with a big, you know, tech employer here in town, who now their management gave them a new onus, they're now also in charge of cloud or whatever it is or something. Now they have a new need, you've got to come back and be able to accommodate that. So having a flexible system is important to be responsive.
A great example of that is one of the manufacturing companies was on a tight schedule. And they asked, when were we going to have our next round of apprenticeship? And I told him, and he goes, well, what if I fund it?
Oh.
And it's like, exactly.
Oh.
Because that means the value's clear for the employer, that we're strategic for their ability to grow, as opposed to, well, when will you get more funding so that you can do an apprenticeship for me?
And that speaks to the value of the apprenticeship system, is that
absolutely
it's a process that includes a bureaucracy, but is flexible and adaptive to what the employer's needs are. It really puts the employer in the driver's seat of what do you want to have happen and how can we work together to make this happen? But it takes multiple partners to make it happen.
It's the ultimate compliment when an employer says, hey, if you can't do it on your schedule, what if we hire you and you do it on mine?
And so the question is, you're getting ready for your second cohort. You're still getting it together. So I'm going to guess the answer was not yet, but that's interesting. Let's see if we can figure it out.
Well, what we did is we already had funding for building and construction, and then we looked for similarities between building and construction and advanced manufacturing. And with that same class that Michael mentioned that's needed for building and construction, that's the feeder class for advanced manufacturing. So we were able to get two different sectors to have the same core class. And now we're able to go in two areas instead of one with the same basic infrastructure, because there was so much in common between the core skills for an entry-level building and construction person and advanced manufacturing. But we had to take a step back to say, wow, there's more similar than they are different. How do we focus on just in a Venn diagram where it overlaps? And that's what the class does.
And I'm really loving the fact that we have Cuesta College faculty that are hearing that same discussion and recognizing these hybrid skills that are valued. We have Workforce Development Board, job developers listening to that same conversation and thinking how we can cooperate and braid funding together to make that type of training actually happen and go out and together screen and find people to make that opportunity.
Yeah, because it takes a village. I mean, it takes a lot of different people to, like, when you want to bring on a new domain, there's a lot you've got to do, right? I'm guessing you're both shaking your heads like, yeah, there's a lot to do. So how many, let's go 3 years out, simple 3 years out, how many domains do you think you'll cover at that point?
In San Luis Obispo, we've identified six major sectors that really drive the local economy. One of those sectors is going away, the energy, power, and utilities. It will not be as dominant of a sector. It may still be a driving sector, but that's to be seen what it plays. But there's what we call uniquely slow, because we have a lot of wine and agriculture and tourism. And then there's advanced manufacturing. There's knowledge and innovation, which includes things like government employees from the college, university, and K-12 sector, but also finance. And the tech sector is sort of included in there. So that's a big sector right there. And then there's also healthcare and...
Is it hospitality?
And hot... No.
Or tourism?
No.
That's uniquely slow.
It's uniquely slow. Building and construction, the one that I just mentioned.
Got it.
So we're really... I think the drivers right now are the tech sector, which is in the knowledge and innovation, the advanced manufacturing, and the building and construction, because housing is on the forefront of everyone's mind.
You bet.
How can we make things more livable and affordable in the Central Coast, along all in California?
Right, right.
So those are three main areas. Healthcare, we'd like to be involved in there, but I think that's already sort of a system that's already in place with the licensing and the regulations already within there. So that would be an additional challenge of dealing with the healthcare sector.
It feels like with these three sectors, once you get them fully built out and you look at all the granularity within them, that'll keep you busy for 10 years.
Well, the goal is the 1,000 additional people. And I think from those sectors, we can get 1,000 additional people.
You said it in an earlier episode, what's the deadline to have those 1,000 new ones?
7 years when Diablo starts their decommissioning.
So, just in listening to you guys talk about how integrated this program is in this community, at the public sector, the private sector, the educational sector, everybody that's involved, and the community knowing what's going on, 1,000 feels like you're off by an order of magnitude. It just outside guy looking at you guys are living with the numbers, but things are going well. And as people start to talk to people, both the students who are getting the better jobs, the employers are saying, oh my gosh, we're getting rock stars here. And the educators, once you've kind of, it's going well now, but once this gets scaled and it's mass, 1,000 just feels small.
Well, we'd like to underpromise and overdeliver.
Fair enough, I got that.
And I think if we can make the goal sooner, for a lot of people, with a scarcity mentality, they'll say, well, how are you going to do it without grant dollars? So our challenge is we need to have a large percentage if that 1,000 isn't tied to grant money.
And we've talked about that, right? Is how sustainability is weaning yourself off of grant money.
We like that challenge.
Yeah. Well, the entrepreneur, I mean, it's just like, give me a challenge. Okay. Yeah. Okay. What else you got? That's it. Right. You know, so I like that. So in 2025, I want to come back here. Okay. And I reserve the right to recall you guys to the table. And we'll see. I want to see what that number is. Because if that's, and that's not the only number. As we said in another episode, I think if we look at the economic impact of this program, that whereas there was a huge economic thing happening to the community that this has responded to, it feels like the economic impact is going to be much greater because of the way you've engineered things, the way you've built the system, the way you've built the partnerships, the way you've thoughtfully and intentionally thought about each piece of it. And I think the people that are listening are going to, the audience are going to agree with that and look to this as a best practice model for how to set it up.
Right. I don't think it's unique. What we've done isn't unique to this small county of San Luis Obispo. I think it could work. I moved here from San Diego. I see no reason it couldn't work in San Diego. It's just the numbers would be much, much bigger because it's a larger population base.
So it's not unique in the sense that it's what you've done is unique. I want to give you guys that.
Correct.
Right? So this is that, which is why we're talking about, which is why we want to get this show out there so that other people can do this, because this is an important thing. What milestones have you set for yourself along the way? Do you have some internal things you're looking to do?
Well, the immediate milestones are as we get these starter grants, is achieving those milestones we set forward in the grants themselves.
Okay.
Because those help lay the foundation of setting up a prototype, setting up your initial success, and setting up just that core process that you know you can build upon. So in terms of before December of this year, before December 2018, we want to have 50 registered apprentices within our the IT and software testing that we started. Next milestones are, we've set for this summer, going into the winter as well, is to bring that boot camp, full stack boot camp, to San Luis Obispo, which has not been on the West Coast before. It's one of the better boot camps out there, most highly rated, and getting at least 100 people to go through that process of being eligible for the full stack boot camp.
The full stack boot camp is to create full software developers in 17 weeks. And so it's an intensive program, but really what it is, it's a head of household job in a matter of months. And that's why we're going after it, is it's not a job that gets you, it's not a boot camp that gets you halfway to a head of household job, it gets you straight to it. And so we have to have a pre-apprenticeship phase with over 100 people to find within those 100, who are the 30 that are good at software and like it. Because a lot of people who are exposed to software development might be good at it, but they don't like it. And some people like it, but they're not good at it.
It does take a certain temperament.
Right. And so over the summer, we're partnering with the high school computer science teachers to be these meetup groups to help people.
Oh.
And then we're doing the classes just at night. But we really want to expose throughout the county, even if they don't go to the coding bootcamp, they now understand software in a way they never did before, and they can apply it toward whatever they do going forward. But we're doing it in a way that the goal is, let's have a group of people that we can show now are at a head of household job, where 6 months earlier they could be working at In-N-Out.
So with the IT, the security, the QA jobs, those are more entry level. Right.
Those are
entry
level positions.
And then these full stack jobs are higher up in the food chain, right?
Yes. So the typical coding boot camp grads around 80,000 a year. And for the IT and the software testing are more like 40. All of our software testers want to become full stack developers.
Right. Right.
So we have the beginning of the pipeline and we have the end of the pipeline.
Right.
It's figuring out how to meet in the middle that's really the challenge we have moving forward. And part of the approach of setting up the screening for who's eligible for the full stack boot camp is about fleshing out, how do we screen for attitude, train for aptitude? through that hybrid type learning of online challenges and content delivery combined with meetups and practicums and open labs where we can help do the intervention of accelerating the intervention or solving any barriers that they'd be having to progressing.
It dawned on me that one of the things that might help you guys, because you're doing this great job of helping people who want to do this, and this is admirable. Are there other Hello Career-like programs that you're aware of that you could build an association, some tribe of guys that are doing, I won't say guys, but people who are doing what you're doing, so that you could be continuing to learn from one another? So that right now you took a cue from Switzerland, North Carolina, right? And so now people are going to take a cue from you. That's totally going to happen, right? Because we're putting it out there. This is how it was done. I would love to see that there is a meeting of the minds to find out, well, what are some of the regional challenges? What are some of the other industry challenges? What do we do if we don't have as great? I mean, there's a great educational system here, right? Great educational infrastructure. What are some of those other things? Because I know you're looking to take this model, I think you said earlier, franchising this thing out there, figuring it out. So it'd be interesting for you guys to be able to talk to these other people. So I would encourage our listener to get in touch with you guys at Hello Careers so that we can start those conversations, because you're obviously proven very adept at partnerships and building relationships. So now let's take that up a level and say, okay, well, what's the ecosystem of people that are doing what we're doing, and how can we make even a bigger impact? What can we learn?
I think that's a great point. I think each local market has unique challenges.
Yeah.
And at the same time has very similar challenges.
Well, that's where I'm going back to this think like a system. Great thing about a system is if done right, it becomes universally applicable with just a few little, you know, modifications to just get it to fit right. But it's most of the time it's going to work just well. You built consumer products that had to, you know, fit a bunch. So you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yep. Yep. I think the key thing is knowing where the tweaks should be in the system, because you know the system well enough.
Right. Exactly. What advice, as we come to the end of this series of episodes here, what advice would you give to the program administrator who's feeling a little frustrated or maybe feeling a little overwhelmed, and, you know, they listen to this and say, oh man, that sounds good, you guys, but God, I'm just buried.
You've got to be a visionary. You've got to be willing to take that risk. The advice, though, is that the payoff will be there, that getting more partners involved rather than being isolated could solve a lot of your problems. So it's worthwhile to recognize that you're not alone in this, that you have some partners, and you just spend some time and strategically think about who would be strategic partners that can share this load with you.
What I appreciate is you're so on brand with that, because we've said that answer. That's been consistent throughout all of these shows. Every single thing that you had to do was like, how can I do this with partners? How can we do this with partners? How
well,
do we do
that? Partners live vicariously through us. What I see, like I gave an update to America's Job Force earlier this week. Everyone there, all their partners go, how can I help? How can I help? Because they see the enthusiasm. They see the innovation. And all of a sudden, there's like 9 groups I didn't even know what they did.
Wow.
All giving me their business card, said, oh, I've got people. Oh, I've got employers. But we're just communicating what we're trying to do. And, you know, it reminds me of angel investors and startups. They often just live vicariously through their startup because they're older. They can't do it themselves. But a lot of these groups were saying, gosh, I wish I was part of this team. I can help you. Please let me help you, because they want to help. because they're excited about what we're trying to do and why, and they like the anchoring. It's tied to something specific toward our biggest employer leaving town, where I don't know if there's a single other concrete step that anyone's taken given that's occurring. Everyone's still talking about the problem. We're doing something, and I believe we'll be well over 1,000 also, but we're sticking our neck out, and we're proud of doing it.
Someone said to me just yesterday, let's stop admiring the problem.
Well, and that's what that overwhelmed person
yep.
may be doing right
yep.
there, is that they're overwhelmed because they've isolated themselves, not unwittingly isolated themselves and have taken the entire burden on by themselves. Of course you're going to be overwhelmed. You're alone fighting the dragon.
Yep.
And I'd say that overwhelmed person, even if they're right 80% of the time, they're still going to get a B. And if they do nothing, they haven't changed anything at all. The key is with entrepreneurship, you have to enjoy the ride.
Yeah, you do.
Because the key thing is, well, look how much better it is, even if we're not perfect, than if we wouldn't have been on this ride.
What everybody's afraid of with a group project is that one person's going to be stuck doing all the work. So all these partners, if it's looked at as, oh, this is a group project, who's really doing all the work? Yeah, you're going to be overwhelmed. You're not going to see the value of the partnership. But you've got to build that partnership. You've got to be able to, are you the leader or the follower? Or are you the facilitator? How do you bring these people together and get through? How are we going to work on this together? So in our case, we're lucky in that we have this context of a major employer leaving, that it really did provide a context for everybody taking notice and wanting to take some action. But we could still all be sitting around wringing our hands wondering what to do, but somebody step up, take a lead, take a risk.
I want to button it up with that. But what I would like to do next is I'd like to go and talk to some of the partners. So I'd love to have the politicians in and the business partners in and some of the students in and the journeymen in. So let's wrap this at 8, and then let's come back and have some other conversations. I know our listener will appreciate listening to some of the recipients and the partners talk about this
great
as
idea.
Well. And you guys, thank you so much. This has been very, very enjoyable, and getting to learn what you're building, how you're building it, why you're building it, why you guys are so excited. And I can tell why when you go out in public, other people want it. You guys are magnetic in that it's like there's gravitational force, right? That's that unknown. When we say screening for attitude, you guys had to have that attitude that draws people towards you. It's easier to make partners when you have that. So thank you so much, and just all the best to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. How will you bring this system to your community and say hello to new careers and goodbye to low-wage jobs? For more episodes, visit hellocareers.org or send us a note to podcast@hellocareers.org. We'd love to hear from you with questions or success stories of how apprenticeship is working in your region. Till next time, I'm Mark Sylvester with Hello Careers.